Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the chambers of the Portland City Council. Today is Wednesday, December 12th, 2012. It's 9:30, and the City Council is about to come to order. Carla, how are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm well. Thank you.
You have all your holiday shopping taken care of?
Not quite.
Okay, well, get on that. Can you please call the roll?
Yes. Leonard? Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Adams.
I'm not ready either. Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed with communications. Can you please read the title to item number 1410?
Request of Mary King to address council regarding the economics of paid sick leave. She called and will have to reschedule.
Thank you. Can you please read the title for communications, item number 1411?
Request of Mark Bradley to address council regarding underground oil storage tanks.
Hi, welcome. Please come forward. All you need to do is give us your name. That clock in front of you will help you count down 3 minutes. And if you're here to speak for yourself, no further introduction is needed. No telephone number, no address, no Twitter account. If you're representing another person or a business or an organization, then you just need to disclose that. We're glad you're here.
Thank you for inviting me. My name's Mark Bradley. I'm a concerned citizen of Portland. Speaking on behalf of many people in this room who may not have information about their own heating system. The reason I'm here is because I was biking to work the other day through Ladd's Addition, and I saw 3 oil trucks delivering oil to underground tanks in Ladd's Addition. I was sad because I knew all these tanks had permits on Portland maps and showed that they were double or triple their lifespan. So I feel that the I'm in a bad news business. I work for Dana Thompson Tanks and Soil, and I'm regularly helping sad people who are encountering leaking tanks. This is not just a Portland problem. It's all over our state. And I believe that because the tanks are unregulated, there's no federal or state rules, and I think the federal and state people are receiving pressure from a petroleum lobby. At this point, I don't want to say I'm against oil. Love oil heat. I love drilling for oil. I love exploration. I think it's an amazing product. I think there's so many places we could go. I'm against bad storage. So this is not just a problem for Portland. It's Lake Oswego. It's Salem. It's all over town. The tanks are made of steel. Steel corrodes with water. We live in a rainforest. The tanks corrode with electricity. We live in a city. Soil conducts electricity. Most of these tanks are leaking, and people are servicing them all the time. My office is in Ladd's Addition at the bottom of the hill, and when I see oil being pumped into the ground, I know it's coming right down the hill under my office. There's serious health risks involved around town as well when people have big plumes of contamination being exposed to volatiles. Happens in a lot of places where there's shallow groundwater. We have lots of shallow groundwater around town. I'm just a concerned citizen. Not here for any particular cause or reason. I just live in Portland, and I work with a lot of sad people all the time, people who lose the equity in their homes and people who are just completely distraught that they didn't have good information. I feel like I'm in the bad news business, and I have really good information for people if they get to me early. And that's the main reason I'm here, and also to thank the DEQ, who's understaffed and underfunded, and I think they do a great job, and they support a lot of people and give a lot of information. And they kind of soften the blow of some of the really sad people, kind of take them down and help them work through these real estate transactions. Most of them are caused by real estate transactions.
You raise a really interesting point that I hadn't really thought about. And if folks wanted to learn more about the status of their underground tanks, they could go to danatanks.com.
That's right.
And how do you spell danatanks.com?
DANATANKS.com.
And it's true you have a 2-for-1 special going on right now?
This man does his homework.
No 2-for-1 specials, but the first show up, when we show up the first time, it's a lost leader. We lose money doing inspections on people's tanks. And we actually prefer the tanks don't leak, because we do better with tanks that don't leak as far as profit margins. When we have to explore and discover leaks, it takes a lot of time. And those are the people I'm most concerned for, people who are adding oil to the ground right now that don't know that their tank has tripled their lifespan. And it's happening all over the city. Like I said, I'm not against oil. I'm just against the bad storage of oil.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. And we'll forward this on to the Bureau of Environmental Services.
Appreciate it.
You betcha. That takes us to the consent agenda. My understanding is that 1428 and 1429 have been pulled. Is that correct?
Yes, as well as 1434.
1434. Can you please read those titles?
1428, apply for permits to allow for installation of a renewable energy project developed by Lucid Energy, Inc. and the Portland Water Bureau. 1429, authorize an agreement with Portland General Electric Company for cost sharing of remediation cost on the Portland Hydroelectric Project. And 1434 is authorize a subcipient contract for Proud Ground totaling up to $746,600 for home buyer financial assistance and for the acquisition and rehab of permanently affordable homes for low-income participants.
Mayor Adams, just in terms of timing, I'm guessing we're going to be in council all day and all night. And so this will be heard at the earliest around 2, probably, or later. Do we know who pulled 1434?
Your office requested that be pulled, and they just want to refile a new one next week, is my understanding.
Oh, so coming back to my office?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
That's an important clarification.
Great. So,
of course, I should have known. Thank you.
Yes. It always happens. So unless there are objections, 14, which one was yours?
34.
Goes back to Commissioner Fish's office. And, all right. So. The other two will be heard at the end of our regular agenda. That gets us to the time certains. First
Take
time certain is a resolution.
Need a roll on the rest of the consent.
Oh, thank you. Can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Now we can go to the time certain. Can you please read the title for resolution, time certain 930-1412?
Accept the report on the initial equity inventory and direct the Office of Equity and Human Rights and the Office of Management and Finance to develop additional tools to assess Bureau performance with regard to specific equity goals and metrics.
Thank you. The Portland Plan is intended to help make Portland a more prosperous, educated, healthy, and equitable city. And the Portland Plan recognizes that advancing equity must be at the core of our plans as a city government. It includes a framework for equity to guide plan implementation and to improve city operations and business practices that support actions for accountability, close disparity gaps, and increase community engagement in civic activities. So to know how we're doing, we have to have a baseline. And so today, for council consideration through this resolution, is a focus on the city's workforce, the workforce that we employ. And it provides both a baseline and a template for measuring further progress moving forward. I really want to commend. Sorry, I'm on a lot of cold medication. Commend Anna Canwit and Dante James for working on this. The public doesn't know, but up until this point, most of the information that we've received as a city council and that in our role as Bureau, in our role as commissioners in charge of, and most of the information received by Bureau managers are stacks of paper that report on statistics and hiring statistics and diversity statistics in the city. And while that information is important to look at, it is very hard to digest on a regular basis. So we will continue to put out so that every section leader and every team leader in the city can see the details of how they're doing in terms of the diversity of their teams and their groups and their subdivisions. But for accountability, this is going to move us forward much further than we have in the past because it is much easier to digest and to read. So with that, I'm pleased to turn it over to Director Bureau of Human Resources, Anna Canwit.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. Commissioners, Anna Canwit, Director of the Bureau of Human Resources. Yeah, I wasn't sure where we were going with the condemn part, Mayor, her last act. But anyways, as the mayor pointed out, a resolution is actually a product of several undertakings to look at a baseline equity for the city of Portland. This began actually before the Office of Human of Equity and Human Rights was fully implemented and before Director Dante James was appointed. And much has been done, as you know, from the reports you've received from Mr. James since the information in the resolution was compiled. Basically, the resolution is, the exhibits contained in the resolution is looking at baseline data. There's the equity inventory that Celia Heron from OMF put together, which was looking at overall strategies, policies, and measures that are currently being used by the bureaus in the area of equity. We have the overall diversity breakdown of the city workforce and a recommendation for inclusion of people of color and women in certain city hiring panels. Just real briefly, the Exhibit A, the first exhibit, shows you a breakdown through about three quarters of fiscal year 11-12 of our applicant data. And during that time, we received almost 10,000 applications. 65% of the applicants were white, 18% were people of color, and then there were 17% that were not identified because, as you know, it's a voluntary identification. Similarly, 53% of the applications were from male applicants and 32% from female, and again, 15% did not designate. So that kind of gives just the overall picture of the applications that are coming into the city. The second exhibit, Exhibit B, which contains quite a number of percentages, but basically what it does for you and for the bureaus, it provides first overview of the city population taken from the 2010 census, a breakdown of female, male, minorities within the city. It does the same breakdown for the total city workforce. The remainder of the exhibit, though, is looking at the diversity of city employees in three categories. Top-level managers, which is directors, assistant directors, and a managerial level below that. Mid-level managers, which are your supervisors, and then entry-level employees. So the numbers don't add up. Those three categories don't equal all of the employees in the city because not everybody will fall into those categories. But we made a determination in conjunction with the mayor's office to look at the data that way because it gives us a better idea of where to focus on in terms of how we're bringing people into the city. We know with our entry-level work is tending to go away with budget cuts. We need to look at the diversity there. And obviously, as moving up into increasingly higher-level leadership positions in the city, it's also important to look at our leadership there. But again, this is baseline data. Exhibit C is the inventory that I talked about that across the city is looking at the programs that we have in place now. The final exhibit, Exhibit D, is the recommendation from the Bureau of Human Resources to implement a modified proposal for including minorities in hiring panels. And what I mean by modified is our recommendation is not that every single hiring panel include people of color on it. What we are recommending, though, is that we include people of color on hiring panels where we know we need to increase the diversity of that classification area, that part in the city, also for leadership positions. And our recommendation is that we use subject matter experts. Of course, it doesn't help us a lot if we have people on our panels that don't understand the work. This is, we based this recommendation in part on what was done in purchasing in terms of the contracting.
And this is an idea we stole from Commissioner Leonard.
Oh, okay, yes, we stole it from Commissioner Leonard. and in talking to the city's purchasing officer, what I found out is an additional benefit of they had an inclusion of minorities in their various processes is it provides information out to the community about our process. And so the knowledge is really helpful, and it provides transparency. And so there's an understanding of the process as well. So we think that's an added benefit of that recommendation. So, you know, next steps with this, obviously, is to adopt the resolution. In addition, I would ask that you encourage your bureaus to work closely with the Bureau of Human Resources. We are working very hard to provide a lot of tools to bureaus in terms of improving their focused outreach. Sometimes, though, that does take a little more time than bureaus would like to fill positions, but we think it's really critical. So support for really using the tools that we have in terms of doing outreach is really important, and ask your support for that. And finally, to provide support continuing in training and education on issues of bias and discrimination reduction that are done both by my bureau and also by Dante's. And the one thing I did forget to point out on the hiring panel, one of the things we're going to start doing for all of our hiring panels is a very brief overview / training in bias reduction so people understand. We all come to hiring interviews with our own biases and prejudice. And I don't mean that in terms of, you know, against someone of color or a certain gender, but people you may be more comfortable with because of the same culture. Someone who comes from New York, I automatically think, wow, I like this person. They talk as fast as I do. One has to be aware of those so that you're making your hiring decisions not based on the people that you feel the most comfortable with, but obviously who are the most qualified. So that's part of our recommendation as well.
Great.
Thank you.
Director James.
Thank you. And just a couple of points. One, certainly we appreciate my office, and I appreciate the work that HR has done in this regard. OMF and Ms. Herron have done in getting what essentially is a snapshot in time of what the various bureaus are doing regarding equity, increasing diversity of their bureaus. And this is specifically, most specifically to workforce. But we are also working with HR to look at not just the end number, but the center of that process of increasing the pool of applicants overall so that the end number can possibly increase. And as Anna said, we would encourage you to encourage your directors of the importance of working with HR. As I've done and my office has done training and consulting with various bureaus and many managers and supervisors, the majority are not aware of the outreach and the targeted outreach and the specific assistance that HR can provide in doing a broader outreach and or have somewhat of a criticism of HR in what is a 2 or 3 year old criticism of what HR does or doesn't do, and is not aware of the current practices of HR and the work that they've done to really increase their targeted outreach and focus on improving those pools of applicants. And so it's just an opportunity to create a broader awareness around the city of the good work that HR is doing and can do on behalf of the Bureau. So I would encourage acceptance of the resolution, and we are continuing to work with HR on metrics. My office is in working in some sense with PSU to assist us in development of metrics, and we are, continuing to improve the way we look at baseline data as well as broaden what that baseline data will be.
One thing that we've been very successful at in the police bureau is to, on your Exhibit A, is to keep a real focus on the openings, like to underscore parts of both of what you say. So Exhibit A, underscore the openings. In this case, 244 positions requested, and then to look, as you've noted, the applicant pool, to what Director James was saying, and to really focus on those openings and to judge our success or failure based on, you know, what's the diversity of each class of cadets, each class of new recruits that we bring in. And little by little, you start to see the big meter change in Exhibit B. So thank you for your work on this.
A question that I appreciate both of your good work, and it's exciting to be moving forward with this. And again, thank you, Mayor, for your leadership on this issue, and the numbers do matter. The numbers show that there's an even greater disparity for women compared with the city as a whole than there are for minorities. And so I'm wondering, is there going to be a female evaluator program considered to make sure that we have gender diversity on the hiring panels?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Does anyone wish to testify on this matter?
No one signed up.
All right. Can you please call the vote on time certain resolution 1412?
Leonard?
Thank you, Mayor Adams, and those that have put this together.
Fritz?
This is important work. If we don't know where we are, we can't map out a place, a way to get to where we need to be. And so I appreciate the good work that's been done over the past 2 years and looking forward to participating as we move forward. Aye.
Fish?
I, too, am pleased to support this work. And I want to echo what the mayor said about recruitments and intentionality, because really it's at the front end where you cast the broadest net and you make sure that the pool is diverse, that we give ourselves the best opportunity to get the best qualified person. And too often the pools have not been diverse. So we have inherently not been selecting from the most qualified people. And that's changing under this approach, and I'm pleased that we're now systematizing it across the, all the bureaus. Aye.
Adams.
Again, thanks to Commissioner Leonard, who I stole your idea, in diverse, requiring diversity of the Oversight Selection Committee for RFPs. We'll now be doing that for hiring panels. To Commissioner Fish, who he and his team helped us polish this to get it where it is today. Thank you for that. And to Commissioner Fritz, who is leading the effort on equity, and I'll be there as Citizen Sam to cheer you on. Aye. Can you please read the title for presentation, item number 1413?
Recognize Bill West, recipient of the 2012 Steve Lowenstein Trust Award.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you. And I have a brief introductory statement. We'll invite Michelle Harper and Bill West forward. Welcome to our honored guests. Mayor and colleagues, this is the fourth year that I've had the honor of presenting the Steve Lowenstein Trust Award. As you know, this award is named for attorney, author, and civil rights activist Steve Lowenstein. Steve had a remarkable resume. He was the founding director of Oregon Legal Services, a Peace Corps volunteer, an advocate for social justice, and the former chief of staff to Mike Lindbergh. Steve wrote that the recipient of the Trust Award, quote, shall be that person who demonstrated the greatest contribution to assisting the poor and underprivileged in the city of Portland, Oregon. Past recipients have included Mariah Taylor, Casey Jama, and Mark Jolin. This year, the board has selected Portland resident William West for his advocacy and years of service to the cognitively and developmentally disabled in our community. Here to tell us more about Bill is Michelle Harper. Michelle, welcome.
Good morning. Michelle Harper, Board Chair of the Steve Lowenstein Trust. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. It gives me great honor to come before you this morning. This award means a lot to our board because it really exhibits the best of who we are as a city. It really tells a lot about what we're all about. If anyone didn't know anything about Portland, they would know that this is a place that cares about its citizens. So I thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this award this morning to Mr. William West, who is our 2012 recipient. I'd like to just acknowledge our board members. No one does this work alone. We have an amazing board, and we work really hard to be able to select candidates that we think to come before you and to exhibit the exemplary work that they do. Board members, if you would just stand briefly. Art Alexander, Jamal Folsom, Ron Paul, David Thornburg, Charles Williamson, Margie Harris. Art Alexander, I think I covered everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you very much. As the commissioner said, Steve was an exemplary person, and we were very, very fortunate to be able to be blessed and to be in his midst. We learned so much from him, and we feel that in doing this work that we have selected candidates over the years that have exhibited his spirit in the work that they have done. The community person that we've accepted, that we have selected this morning, Mr. West, he is a person who is a quiet warrior but makes a lot of noise as far as the advocacy for the intellectually and developmentally disabled community. This is an issue that is very, very close to my heart. I was very fortunate when I was working at Parks and Recreation to manage a program, Adaptive and Inclusive Recreation. And it was a wonderful experience to work with some incredible people who opened my eyes to so many of the issues and the challenges of the community. And to be able to, to be able to learn and grow and participate in activities This is a community where some of the challenges may be invisible to us, but they're very real to the people who they're happening to. And we use this opportunity in giving this award to not only acknowledge the person for their work, but also raise the level of visibility of an issue that may need more attention by the council, or whether it's nationally, locally, or globally. But we use that as an opportunity, as a platform. Mr. West has dedicated over 30 years of his life for advocating and assisting Portland and Multnomah County and Clackamas County community members who are working through the challenges presented by developmental disabilities. Whether it's finding lodging, counseling, medical assistance, housing, legal services, Mr. West has been there for the community he has chosen to serve. He has assisted hundreds and thousands to navigate the daunting and seemingly impenetrable bureaucracies. His work often has made the difference between a person's independence or institutionalization. Up to the year 2000, when Fairview Training Center was closed, Mr. West was an advocate for those who were housed there. He also helped with a group of the Portland area and state chapters and created an organization called People First of Oregon. This was the state's leading advocacy group run for and people with developmental disabilities. The rippling effect was felt around the nation, and people embraced the idea that a mental disability does not mean surrendering the right and the responsibility to speak for themselves. Additionally, while Fairview was open, he worked as an advocate during hearings for residents and particularly difficult and perfect personal circumstances, helping to make sure that their rights and best interests were respected. In recent years, Mr. West has focused his attention on helping local governments and working with developmentally disabled community. He helps public agencies understanding the pressing needs for policies and procedures, coming up with strategies, and particularly in law enforcement, designed to help employees recognize and to be sensitized and supportively engage people with disabilities. Mr. West is deeply committed to reducing the likelihood that interactions with community will turn into a needless or dangerous or tragic confrontation. For his years of compassion and dedication to the safety and welfare and independence of the vulnerable, underserved, and too frequently invisible members of our community, the Lowenstein Trust is very proud to acknowledge Mr. William West as our recipient for this year. His list of accomplishments with the ARC is endless. He sees a problem, comes up with a solution, even if there's no resources. He just connects with people. He pounds the pavement. Many times, the folks that he is helping, they're just below that line of not getting services. They fall through the cracks. And he's been that bridge that they can cross to having a healthy and a sustainable life. So I want to just tell you that this man that we present this morning is one of Portland's finest. And he, as I said before, he exhibits the best of everything that Portland has to offer. And I will just turn it over and give him a few moments to make comments of himself.
Thank you so much. I'm so honored to be here. This award was totally unexpected. And it's especially an honor to be receiving this award from representatives of our city, a city that I love so much and have given my heart to. Very nervous and a little emotional about all this, but I really appreciate the kind words that everybody has said. This has been a challenging job. I'm fortunate to have worked at the same place and the same job for 30 years, kind of unheard of nowadays. But, you know, I'm pretty resolute in what I do. And I have many, many good supporters. Many of the people are here today that are some of the people that could be here getting this award just like me. And they are my models. And as are people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and people with mental illness. I do also work with a number of people that have multiple disabilities. Their courage, their compassion, their empathy, people that have these disabilities, is something that sustains me. And I've had so many people say thank you to me in the past that not receiving an award would have been fine. But the graciousness of the city giving me this award is something that I'll cherish all my life. And my family's here and they've always supported me, and I thank them very much for that. And like, one goal in life is to make our lives easier for all of us all the time. Thank you so much.
Bill, we're gonna ask you to take a quick picture with us in a second, but I also just want to observe that there's something very poignant about acknowledging and recognizing you at the end of this calendar year, because this has been a year of distinction. This is the year that we launched an Office of Equity, and thanks to the tireless work of the mayor and Commissioner Fritz. This is a year in which we placed Charles Jordan's name on one of our great community centers and thanked him for his lifetime of work in removing barriers. This is a year the Parks family cut the ribbon on Harper's Playground, a playground for children of all abilities. And this is a year we end with what I consider to be the most important award that the Parks family and the Lowenstein Trust gives out every year, which is the Lowenstein Award for your lifetime of service. So thank you for being part of a year of distinction, and thank you for your incredible service to our community.
Thank you so much. And one comment that you made in the media the other day about always not undervaluing people that are considered to be the undeserving poor. I share in your values that there are no such thing as people who are undeserving. We need to be working with everybody and helping everybody. And I'll also say this has been a very challenging time for my agency. Advocacy for people with these disabilities is crucial. We've been struggling, so I'm going to give the prize money that I get for this to the ARC of Multnomah and Clackamas. We need to sustain our advocacy efforts, and we call on the community to help us with that process.
Michelle, can we take a quick picture here?
Sure.
And officially give him the check?
Yes.
And can we invite board members up for a picture?
Carla, can you please read the title for Emergency Ordinance Item 1414?
Authorize a contract with Alta Bicycle Share, Inc. for a bike share system in the city.
If I could have staff come forward while I give some opening remarks. This is the fourth time that the Portland City Council has had the opportunity to consider the bike share program, the RFFA grant application, approval of the RFP, approval of the IGA with ODOT, and approval of a contract with Alta today is what's before us for our consideration. In front of you today is a draft contract with Alta Bike Share to fundraise for and operate a public bike share system for 5 years in the city of Portland. The contract includes no city funds, but provides $1.8 million in grant funds to Alta for purchasing and installing bikes and stations, to be matched by roughly $6 million of private sponsorship funds to launch a 750 bike share system and operate it for 5 years. The contract provides multiple opportunities for the Bureau of Transportation and Alta to size the system, location, and sponsorship funding package based on fundraising success. The city resolution that authorized the grant applications also directed PBOT to seek funding for two important projects, Sullivan's Gulch and Barber Demonstration Project. I've included a memo from PBOT staff that outlines the status of each of those projects, but for the sake of those in attendance, PBOT has submitted 7 grant applications, including 4 active applications for the Barber Street and Sullivan's Gulch projects, and we remain committed to funding those projects per resolution. Today we'll hear from PBOT staff, Dan Bauer and Steve Hoyt Macbeth, as well as Mia Burke from Alta Bike Share. Staff has also worked with the Coalition of Communities of Color to develop standards for the jobs created through this project, and Alan Hippolito from Verde is here today to speak on that point as well. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Hoyt Macbeth.
Or Mr. Bauer.
Or Mr. Bauer.
Anyway, but actually, you said everything I was going to say, so that's
okay.
Great. I'm Dan Bauer with Active Transportation, City of Portland. Just before we get started, I want to take a moment to have some clarity about the cost of the system. In your ordinance, point number 8 says the system cost is $7.8 million. What's that? What the intent of that is to actually...
Can you close the door? Yeah. Is the door open?
It's closed.
Rowdy. Tell them to be quiet.
I also provided a press release that we sent out yesterday to media that clarifies the cost of this project. So you'll see the $7.8 million that's in the ordinance actually refers to the $1.8 of grant funding plus the $6 million of sponsorship revenue we need to launch the system. Doesn't account for the revenues that we generate on the system.
Gotcha.
So the cost of the system to launch is $4.6 million. The cost to operate is $1.9 million per year. And we have a 5-year number in there because these are federal funds. We have to operate the system for a full 5 years. So that would be the total cost number in front of you there. I think with that, I'm going to hand it over to Steve Hoyt Macbeth to give a quick presentation on what we're pursuing here, and then we'll go from there.
Thank you, Dan. I also have a PowerPoint. There it goes. I wanted to give a brief...
Pardon? Oh, with the laptop when you do that.
Oh. So. Maybe...
You can trade places if you want.
Yeah.
And you need to push that button.
Okay, great. So I wanted to provide a brief description of Bike Share.
You need to push it again.
Just push it once.
Once. And just let go. Push it again.
The battery may be dead.
Okay.
Use Alan.
Really?
We'll switch seats again.
Again.
It's like square dancing.
Stand back.
Sorry, Alan.
Pardon me. I wanted to give a brief description of Bike Share, our work to date since we were in front of council asking for approval of these funds last summer, and then give a brief description of the contract under consideration. So Bike Share is a system of public bikes available for short-term rental at unattended self-service locations. It's intended for trips of 3 miles or less or 30 minutes or less. Bike Share is growing very rapidly in the United States. In 2008, there were 2 cities operating small bike share systems. 4 years later, we have over 26 systems now operating. Nashville opens tomorrow. These range in size from very small in Spartanburg, South Carolina, of 10 bikes to almost 1,700 bikes in the Washington, D.C. region. And what we're seeing from, especially the large systems that are actually at scale, these are 2012 numbers, not cumulative, but just for 2012. When you build a system at scale, Bike Share really operates as an extension of the public transit system. It provides an affordable, popular, and convenient way to get to work, to get to your work errands, to get to school, to deal with commerce, and for entertainment. So we had about 12 to 15 goals in our Bike Share RFP, but I want to talk about the main ones. Of course, we want to increase bicycling trips, both by bringing new people to bicycling and also increasing the amount that people who are currently biking are doing so. We want to reduce car trips, especially single occupancy vehicle trips, and we want to create jobs. So the Portland Plan, of course, is our strategic guide to where we go as a city. And in regards to our climate goals and greenhouse gas reduction goals, bicycling has been identified as a key tool in reducing our transportation carbon footprint, with 25% of commute trips happening by bike by 2035. So over the past 2 decades, we've done some really great work. We've built over 300 miles of bikeways. We have the highest commute rate in the country, and yet right now we're at 6% of commute trips by bike. So we know that we have some innovative programs that have really helped us get to here, such as Safe Routes to School, Smart Trips, Sunday Parkways, our Neighbor Greenways program. But if we want to grab more people and get them into biking, we need to do new also explore new tools that are working in other places. And the good news is looking at the survey data from these large systems, that when people join BikeShare, they actually bike quite a bit more than they were beforehand, and they also drive less. We've seen a significant reduction in single occupancy vehicle trips reported by BikeShare members in surveys in both Minneapolis and Denver, which is very encouraging. Of course, jobs is very important. We project that Portland BikeShare will create 20 new jobs. We worked with our contractor, Alto Bicycle Share, and representatives from the Coalition of Communities of Color to make sure that these jobs and the wealth created by these jobs is shared by a broad cross-section of our community, and we have some very aggressive goals in the contract related to job hiring. We spent considerable effort ensuring that we engaged all of Portland in a discussion about bike share and how we can maximize its benefit in Portland and reach a broad cross-section of the community. We held over 40 public meetings with business associations, neighborhood associations, affordable housing providers, community service organizations, universities, and private businesses. We also undertook an interactive online tool called a crowdsourcing map, which allowed people to tell us where they would like to see a bike share station, and then also leave comments on that tool, and also vote to say which stations they like the best. We had over 900 suggestions given to us through the website of bike share stations. We had over 5,000 votes in terms of support for different stations tallied, including this one at the Oregon Convention Center. So I wanted to just briefly go over the main tasks of the contract. As the mayor mentioned, there is $1.8 million of federal transportation dollars in this contract. There's no city money in this contract. So the first task of Alta Bicycle Share will be to go out and secure financial commitments for the remaining costs related to the project for the launch of the system and the operation of the system, likely to happen through sponsorships, which has been a model that's been used successfully in other cities. Once they have conducted that and it's been approved by the city, then we will be reimbursing that task with $50,000. The second task is developing a draft station map that we will then take out to the community and vet through a series of public meetings. And then, of course, the securing the permissions from the owners and the permits that will also have a $50,000 reimbursement. Then a marketing plan to make sure we have a way to reach a lot of Portlanders and hit a lot of the different submarkets that are out there to making the system successful. And then the fun stuff begins to happen, putting the purchase order in for the system, buying the bikes and the stations, inspecting the bikes, installing them, and doing our hiring, and then, of course, launching the system and operating it for 5 years. In conclusion, I wanted to speak a little bit more about the social equity provisions that were so important to this contract. And in building the contract, we really leaned on both the Coalition of Communities of Color and the high road standards that were developed as part of the Clean Energy Works of Oregon program, the pioneering work that was undertaken under the leadership of Mayor Adams, which really set out some principles referred to as the high road standards, as in the idiom of taking the high road, which speak to how to ensure that the jobs that are created with public money actually flow back into the community and provide wealth for a great cross-section of our community. So we intend to, after the execution of this contract, form a high roads committee that will be comprised of members from the coalitions of communities of color, from job training organizations and other advocacy organizations, along with the city and our contractor. We've already laid out some specific goals in terms of 50% of job hours going to people from underserved communities, including 30% from communities of color, low-income residents, veterans, immigrants, refugees, disabled individuals, and formerly incarcerated people. We also have, as part of that, as a tool to make sure we meet those goals, which is outlined in Attachment C. We will identify a sole or two training providers with expertise in hiring and training with people from underserved communities to ensure that we're reaching folks. We're setting a minimum standard of the wage at 150% of the minimum wage, and after 90 days, full benefits and health insurance for full-time employees. And lastly, Alta has agreed to discount up to 500 memberships annually at $35 a year. We intend to work to get that number lower through pursuing grant opportunities and partnerships with different organizations. And we are, one of the nice things about actually not being first out of the gate on bike share is that we've got to learn a lot from other cities on what works and what doesn't work on trying to ensure that these, the bike share is available and accessible and used by all members of our community. That is all I have, and I wanted to turn it over to Mia Burke with Alta Bicycle Share.
So just to clarify, somebody who's not a member can't just walk up to the booth and rent a bike?
Yes, they may. They may purchase a day pass and right up to the kiosk, and yes.
Welcome back. Congratulations.
Thank you. Do I have to push a button?
No. Okay. You're good.
Thank you, Mayor Adams, commissioners. Today, we accept the responsibility for developing, fundraising, launching, and operating Portland's bicycle transit system. It's going to be a long-lasting system, and we will be intertwined for many years to come. Now, I have to admit that 4 years ago, I think that's the last time I was here when Portland adopted the master plan for 2030, I was kind of skeptical about bike share at that point. We didn't have systems in North America to look at, and I felt then that developing a world-class bikeway network and investing in the kinds of encouragement programs that the city's already was already doing were a higher priority for Portland than bike share. And since then, though, my mind has been changed. And as Steve mentioned, bike share is the solution that's going to get us to the goals, the ambitious goals set out in the Portland plan. And I say this based on really deep experience that we've gained by launching and operating the nation's largest bike share systems in D.C. and Boston in particular, and by our technology partner, Public Bike Sharing, Inc., also called Bixi, in Montreal and Toronto and London and Minneapolis. And add in the experience of hundreds of cities in Europe and China, Mexico, Australia, and beyond, and it's clear that done right, bike share is a game changer. And a lot of cities have done bike share at a small scale, sort of touristy oriented, a few stations here and there, and those are nice and those are good, but they're not at the scale that allows bike sharing to fulfill its potential. And done right, with the right planning, scale, fundraising, equipment, and operator and operations, and virtually overnight, we can create here in Portland a long-lasting, win-win, healthy, sustainable transportation solution. This has been our experience. Just a word about Alta Bike Share. It grew out of our sister firm, Alta Planning and Design, which is headquartered here, and it started in 1999 out of my kitchen on Southeast Clinton Street. And now we have 23 offices across North America with more than 100 staff. Our headquarters are here on Southeast Grand. We bought and refurbished a beautiful building specifically because of the streetcar. So we're really, you know, we're really part of the fabric of Portland's business community, bike-related business community, but just the business community, period. And we're here, we're headquartered here, we're going to stay here. So, it, you know, we're really excited to have this contract here. It's nice to not have to be dealing with the East Coast all the time. And we are engaged in communities all over North America. So one of the things that you get is not just local experience and connections, but the experience of this network of bike share systems across North America. Now, fun stuff, so that's all good. Now, I just want to have a reality check moment. This contract is going to be a challenge, and as Mayor Adams, as you pointed out, the responsibility for the bulk of the fundraising and operations is on the contractor. And in the other cities, the cities pay us to operate the system, and they took the responsibility of raising all the money, and we're the operator. New York's the one exception where we're responsible for fundraising there, and we did successfully fundraise there, and we have sponsors at almost $50 million. So we're excited about it here. We're confident that we can get Portland a great system, but it is a big responsibility on us, and that's going to be a challenge. Portland is not the same as New York City, does not have the deep pocket companies and the media value that New York has with the density of population and activities. So I see it as a challenge. I like challenges. I'm excited about it, but I'm also cautious, and I don't want to overpromise what and when we can deliver. Instead, I want to work really hard and with all of you to make this a success. We have found in the cities that are successful in raising funding, raising sponsorships for bike share, we need high-level city support. We need mayoral level or commissioner level involvement day to day. So as you're leaving and we're welcoming a new mayor and a new commissioner, we will be coming back really to ask for that kind of help in seeking and securing the right sponsors that make sense for Portland. And that's what I'm hoping. We're excited about the opportunity to provide local jobs, working with the communities of the Coalition of Communities of Color to provide working wage jobs. And I welcome that. It's part of the fabric of what we do already. Most of the stipulations that were requested were things that we were already doing, so no problem. And we're excited to hand in hand launch the fundraising and the development effort for this program. Thank you.
May I ask a question of her?
If I could just ask the first one. If you could talk about the experience in New York City and the issue of, well, you worked on getting your own software as opposed to relying on a subcontractor, and then Hurricane Sandy came along and destroyed a lot of your equipment, but I understand things are moving forward.
Yeah. Well, the equipment is all provided. The equipment and software is provided by Bixi Public Bike Sharing Inc. out of Montreal, and they decided to shift to in-house software, which makes a lot of sense to have a fully integrated system. But of course, it didn't go perfectly or smoothly, and so it was going to be delayed a little bit. And then, because of the seasonality in New York, the mayor in New York wanted to wait and make sure the software was completely working. And we're doing a lot of testing. And at that point, Hurricane Sandy came and destroyed. So it was 6 feet of muddy, polluted salt water crested in about a 15-minute period and destroyed all of the equipment. So everything's being retooled. The sponsor and the financiers are still in. All the contracts have been renegotiated. And it's moving forward with a smaller launch that will happen in the spring and likely to be late April or May. Software testing is ongoing, and all the partners are committed to moving it forward. So it is what happens when you do great planning and then life intervenes.
Thank you. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Mia, welcome back. I understand the Smithsonian's asked for your kitchen. couple questions. Now that we have experience with bike share in cities across the country, what are a couple of the common challenges that cities face, separate and apart from what we normally see in procurement processes and, you know, new computer systems and things like that, but what have been a couple of the maybe unexpected challenges that other cities have faced for this to become successful?
Oh, thank you. That's a great question. I think one of them is one that Alan and the coalition have continued to point out, which is how to really broaden the base of users and allow entry for those that don't have credit cards, because the system is based on having security so that the bikes, you know, if the bike is lifted, that there's a way to compensate. And so obviously that has been, you know, the easiest thing to do is tie it to a credit card. And for those that do not have credit or access to credit, that is, we have not figured that one out yet. There's a lot of programs that are being tested, but that's definitely something that I'm looking forward to Portland really working on and finding a way that it's a broad base of users. So that's one. Another, I would say, is on the positive side, we've had very little problem with theft, and we've had very little problem with vandalism, and we've had very few safety problems. So that's the good news, is there haven't been, there's really almost no history of crashes whatsoever. And the benefits in terms of usage and mobility and getting people out moving is super, super positive. So that's on the positive side. The system's also very nimble. It can be moved around, and it can serve events and those kinds of things. So that's on the positive side. And I think the challenge is, the funding is going to be a challenge. And the federal grants, some of the cities are using larger federal grants. Some of them are secured sponsors differently. Some of them put city funding into it. So that's, kind of a different way that Portland is approaching it. And I think that's going to be, I think ultimately it'll be a good thing for Portland to spend the time to invest the community in figuring out how to fund and operate the system. It's still relatively new in most of the cities. So I would say we have to think through longevity. I think of this as starting a new TriMet, but let's learn from what's been happening with TriMet and try to look at the future and ensure that this will be with us for generations to come. And nobody's done that yet, so we're in the early stages on thinking that through.
One last question. You know, when you think about people, for example, who visit us downtown, if someone wants to get a cab, I think we're all hardwired to try to find the nearest hotel. And hopefully there's a cab line. If you want a bus, we now have an app we can put on our phones that shows us where the bus is and the next scheduled bus. Do you have a sense from other cities of where, what the best locations are for siting these? Do some work better than others? And just generally, what are preferred locations for siting bike share stands?
Well, first I want to tell you, there is a really cool app. And so you'll be able to look at an app at all points and see how many bikes are at each station. And, you know, so there's all kinds of cool technology stuff that'll be part of this. And Steve actually did a lot of work already looking at siting. Do you want to? And so basically places where there's lots of humans and lots of activity, and, you know, because this really system is dependent upon a lot of usage. And Steve, you did some work on that.
Sure,
do you want to talk about that?
And if I could, just one thing that we benefit from over the years is it's described now and planned now as you did, as an extension of transit.
Yeah.
And that's something that we benefit from, the lesson learned of other communities, which started out not necessarily viewing it as such.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mayor.
Exactly.
I would make two points. One is that for the visitors and tourists who will use the system, hotels, like very large destinations, obviously Pioneer Square, our tourist destinations will definitely be spots where they will look, you know, they'll be going anyway, and we'll have bike share at them. I want to, when we first started looking into bike share, everybody thought that the system would be built on tourists, and from other cities we're learning that tourism is a small piece of the overall rider profile, although it's important in terms of revenue because tourists tend to use the system differently. But so for the tourists, we kind of mentioned the destinations are very important. And then when we're looking at the rest of the stations, it looks very much like where you have a high capacity transit system. So where do we put MAX stations? We put MAX stations where there's a lot of destinations, where there's a lot of jobs, where there's a lot of people living. And we're using that same criteria when we're looking at potential bike share stations. So where there's a lot of people coming and going.
Good. Well, thank
Portland
you.
State.
Alan. Can we have Alan speak for a few minutes? Yep.
Mr. Hippolyta, welcome back.
Thank you. Oh, this chair's really comfortable. I'm glad I got it back. It's got padding. Mayor Adams, commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to testify. Today, my name is Alan Hippolyto. I work for Verde, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Communities of Color. As Ray Espana would say, it's a blessing to be here with you today. The Coalition of Communities of Color addresses the socioeconomic disparities, institutional racism, and inequity of services experienced by our families, children, and communities. And the Coalition organizes our communities for collective action, resulting in social change to obtain self-determination, wellness, justice, and prosperity. I'd like to speak to the Coalition's involvement in bike share. Our work together with the city and this council on bike share and other sustainability initiatives and to the path forward. The Coalition has been involved in bike share since 2011, when a small group of CCC members, Native American Youth and Family Center, ERCO, Hacienda CDC, Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives, Urban League, El Programa Hispano, and Verde, then known collectively as the Community for Equity, began to look at Portland's bike economy. We got involved because we believe that Portland's bike economy offers real opportunities for low-income people and people of color. Per an Altus study, we learned that 2008, this economy was worth roughly $90 million and was generating somewhere between 800 and 1,100 jobs. Roughly one quarter of Portlanders are people of color. If we had a proportionate share of that 90 million, this 22 plus million would exceed the combined budgets of most of the members of the Coalition of Communities of Color. If we had a proportionate share of the bike economy's 800 to 1,100 jobs, these 200 plus jobs would be the most successful industry-specific green job program for our communities in the city. So we got involved. We started with the city's application for regional flexible funds for Metro, testifying at TPAC and JPAC, and we wrote a letter to the council, the Metro Council. And I feel a great personal responsibility for our failure to come to an equity agreement before the flex funds were approved, because it would have sent a powerful message to existing bike share stakeholders. In our letter to the Metro